This is Mae Brussel.
And the name of my program is World Watchers. I hope you tape this. It goes pretty fast. Those of you who listen know that it goes fast, and there's a lot of names that nobody can remember very long unless they're in the newspaper every day. So, and some are. So tape it if you can, and send for bibliography sheets. Write to me, Mae, M-A-E, Brussel, just like it sounds, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel, California. I'm not going to talk much about Ronald Reagan's procedures in Libya because I don't have a chance. I didn't hear much of it today, and I'm not familiar with what took place. A friend of mine who's listening to World Watchers, she follows it every week, warned me several weeks ago that she heard that there would be a plan equal to like an invasion, an attack on Libya. She must be chuckling today because she told me it would take place on this date. I believe it was the 23rd or 24th, and that this was known several weeks ago. And I couldn't believe that the President of the United States would do anything that stupid. We have a budget we can't balance, and we're spending in the Mediterranean $1 million a day, and we'll be antagonizing the Muslim community, the oil industry over there. We're having enough trouble with them, and it just seems impossible that Ronald Reagan hasn't got enough to do to set the fleet over there to attack Muammar Gaddafi. I think of all the things he has to do. I started listing some of them before I came to the station tonight when I heard about it. I wondered if these aren't diversionary tactics, because he literally is up against the wall with so many trials going on. there's the subpoenaing of the radio telephone communication of the Challenger with Kristen McAuliffe. And, of course, the White House will be sanitized, but I believe that the NASA people have a reason that they didn't open the office for 5 hours to hold a press conference after the disaster. And delayed it. It should have been in 20 minutes. It took 5 hours, and in that time they could sanitize any communication they wanted. The scandals coming out of the Philippines are outrageous. The links of the U.S. military base to tracing Mr. Aquino, Benigno Aquino, and leading to his murder, directly linked to the U.S. military. There's a position in the paper with William Casey's name on. It has to do with $86 million of fraudulent money sent out of the country or payoffs that was to go to an atomic plant or part that had nothing to do with the Philippines, that involves the American military. And also there is the suggestion of a lot of money for Ronald Reagan. It could even be up to the millions, but there is a lot of money, and these scandals may be coming out. He sent Paul Axalt, who was the fundraiser for the Republican Party through his administration over there, and Paul Axalt has his own lawsuit coming up in Nevada with allegations of mafia connections and putting up money for his hotel and holding. And William Donovan's trial hasn't started yet. Donovan employed for Schiavone Construction, the man who killed Jimmy Hoffa, and he is the strong link of the Teamsters to the Reagan administration. The Teamsters Union has been identified over and over again in the past year and in the past weeks with their strong mafia ties by the Justice Department and people investigating organized crime in this country. The DeLorean trial has stalled, which is directly connected to the close relationship of DeLorean to Johnny Carson and the Reagan-Hollywood connections, and then DeLorean-South American connections and his Vatican connections. And the Claus Barbie trial hasn't started, and he's threatening to name names. And he's directly linked in Bolivia to the cocaine traffic, to Joseph Mengele, to people close to the administration of Ronald Reagan. And shall I go on? Tommaso Busetta, the primary witness in Milan and in the United States for the pizza trial, the mozzarella pizza trial. The organized crime and heroin traffic is linked to Donald Reagan, the chief of staff, and Merrill Lynch. Has been linked since 1982 in government papers and documents. And to George Bush's brother-in-law, Mr. Pierce, the head of E.F. Hutton. And Michaela Sindona was murdered in his cell this week, known as God's Banker. One of the most important men in the Vatican, who wore three hats, one for the Vatican, one for the CIA, and one for the Mafia, all the same, and one big ball of wax. Somebody gave him the cyanide, so there's still a murder or a team of murderers running that operation, and a arrest in Miami of Mr. Rega, the head of the Argentine Death Squad, who works with the P2, and Licio Gelli, who's still out running. Licio Gelli of the P2 and the Nazi fascist circle was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, and he's closely linked to Michael Ledeen and Claire Sterling, who passed off the shooting of the Pope as being a terrorist from the left, where it was CIA and government-controlled. And Mr. Pazienza is talking in his cell about Stefano Della Calle, the co-worker of Liz Ogelli, being in Miami, going in and out of Miami, the world's worst terrorist since Otto Skorzeny died. And he's talking about Michael Ledeen and Claire Sterling and their work in making disinformation on the shooting of the Pope. And, of course, the attack on the Pope was organized and synchronized by the CIA and Frank Turpel, who worked with Muammar Gaddafi and Pazienza and Ellis and Aja have said that there were links to promising Aja. He twisted this to a Bulgarian KGB story that the Pope would be killed by these people if they had their way. He would be free to go to Libya. And, of course, the White House chief of Ronald Reagan's personal finances, part of the kitchen cabinet, Mr. Wilson, and I'll talk more about him next week, made a quick trip down to Libya yesterday, and he still sells oil and works with Gaddafi as a businessman. And so the Vatican agent, our ambassador to the Vatican, was down there with Gaddafi yesterday, and so the shooting started today. I just listing off the top of my head just a few problems that Reagan has in court that lead to stolen money, to drug money, to flight capital out of countries, to death squads, to fascism, to World War II, to the Knights of Malta, to the OSS that became the CIA, the organizations that killed John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and hundreds more. To put Reagan in as president, they put in Nixon, and when he fell, they put in Gerald Ford, who was on the Warren Commission, and Reagan. So I think that this attacking Gaddafi is just a huge diversionary. It'll be interesting to see how much media attention it gets, but it has to boomerang in some way. Now, last week, I briefly mentioned, just a few minutes, the relocation of the Navajo and the Hopi Indians, that bill that I described just about a year ago that should be repealed and wasn't repealed. And I want to just give a few more minutes on that. It's a terribly important matter. And we talk about Libya or South Africa or the Philippines, and it's very convenient to worry about murders in Chile or Brazil or Egypt. But in our own country, we are avoiding too much the real story of what is happening to our own treasure. And it is a treasure. The American Indian, their philosophy is a treasure. If you read the Book of the Hopi, if you know Indians are familiar with their traditions, this is a national treasure. And instead of protecting it, we have been systematically wiping it out. A subscriber to my broadcast who lives in New York sends me a subscription to Aqua Sasne Notes, which is a newspaper put out by the Indian tribes several times a year, about four times a year. And in their last issue, they have the addresses of people you can write and phone numbers that you can call if you're concerned about what is going to happen at Big Mountain this summer near Flagstaff. In this newspaper, there is a reminder that the Hopi Indian, the Hopi Navajo joint use area problem resolved in a relocation order in 1974 that the Navajos were to lose their land. Now, in 1974, Richard Nixon had just won his election. He wasn't out yet because of Watergate, and this had been building up in the 70s to move the Navajos away from this land. And the man behind that, Senator Barry Goldwater of Arizona, is a politician who was the one to catapult Ronald Reagan and nominate him for his high offices, governor, and then push his presidency. And Goldwater has always worked with Richard Nixon very closely. So in 1974, the wheels started. In July 1986, the eviction notice takes place. And at that time, Ronald Reagan's spokesmen have said the U.S. Marshals and the U.S. military can come in and kill any Indians that are there. Based on the 1974 Relocation Act, the spokesman for Ronald Reagan said, Richard Morris, that starting in July 86, the eviction of the Navajos will be enforced by U.S. Marshals and the U.S. military, and they want to move them out. Now, there's approximately 10,000 Navajo Indians that will be forced out, and the whole thing about it is that certain companies, such as the oil companies and the uranium companies, the coal, particularly coal and uranium, the Peabody Coal Company, and the uranium that is underneath their land is what this government wants. that to make atomic bombs, hydrogen bombs, plutonium bombs, and so forth. The addresses, I'll read them fast, but is again, send me a self-addressed stamped envelope and you can have them printed and see them. There is a big mountain legal organization in Flagstaff, Arizona, 2501 North 4th Street, 86001, Flagstaff, Arizona. There's another support group nearby in Berkeley, California. You might call them 415-841-6500 or write 1412 Cypress Street, Berkeley, 94703. There are three organizations, another one in Arizona, and I can give you the addresses of where to write. As of December 19th, 1985, just about 6 months ago, or four actually, Congress passed the law which would provide money for them to relocate, $50 million to relocate 10,000 Navajo and Hopi Indians. But there's a lawsuit coming up already that they're being ripped off of the money. When they move to other places, the relocation homes and the real estate people are ripping them off. The loan companies are ripping them off. They have no ordinary protections, and therefore they are being touched at the other end as they leave. Those that are willing to leave and take the money to leave are being ripped off at the other end. And Big Mountain is a special religious place, a meeting place, and they really do want to stay there, and there could be terrible consequences in the summer if we bring in the troops and begin shooting the Navajo and the various Indian tribes that will be there. Now, when Richard Nixon came into power in the early 70s, he began his foreign policy and his domestic policy with a specific goal in mind. And I have a very interesting book called Global Reach, The Power of Multinational Corporations. It's written by Richard Barnett and Ronald Mueller. Simon & Schuster published it in 1974. And there's a quotation here in 1971, within a year of the Nixon's administration, his game plan was to take over Chile, and he set up teams specifically through the Treasury Department under Director John Connally, who also at one time was Secretary of the Navy, and they were to begin the destabilization and the strangling off of the funds for Chile to cut down a loan from $220 million to $35 because Mr. Pinochet hadn't won the election, and they would be sure to remove Allende, and also the military aid would jump for the military aid to overthrow Allende from 800,000 to 12 million in just 2 years. But in 1971, when he did this, the Secretary of State for Richard Nixon was William Rogers, who told the corporations that the Richard Nixon's administration, he said the Nixon administration is a business administration. Its mission is to protect American business. Now, the interesting thing is William Rogers, the Secretary of State, who then proceeded with many murders in Chile and concentration camps and tortures, he was speaking right up front that the Nixon administration is business. And domestically, the Nixon administration was business. They signed over that the Indians had to move to get ready for the uranium to belong to the corporations and the Peabody Coal Company. Now, in 1971, John Connally worked closely through this time period with the British American Commerce Corporation, known as Permandex, the assassination teams described in the Torbett document. John Connally and the secretary, as Secretary of the Treasury, was to take over the destabilization of Chile. The Permandex operation, the BACC, was linked directly to Nazi Germany, to Huntsville, Alabama, to Wernher von Braun and Walter Dornberger, and the Project Paperclip scientists. So John Connally was working in those days, 1971 and through the Nixon administration, with the Nazis at Huntsville, Alabama, who were making the rockets and the atomic weapons to control space and the future Star Wars. William Rogers, in 1986, is Ronald Reagan's appointee to investigate the Challenger mishap as it swings to more military up in space. And the orders for the Challenger to lift January the 28th to override Morton Thiokol in Utah came from Huntsville, Alabama, the same people that had worked back in the 70s and in the 60s with John Connally, mentioned in their role to kill John Kennedy and then overthrowing Allende in the 70s and Connally's Department of Treasury doing that work, and the orders to launch in the cold, which was tantamount to being fatal, came from Huntsville, the same people who worked with Connally back in the 60s, again in the 70s, and Ronald Reagan's warning the U.S. military can kill the Navajo Indians will take place July 1986, and the uranium that is under the Indian property will go to Huntsville, Alabama for Star Wars and weapons, so that the importance of studying the John Kennedy assassination and going back to 1960 and 1962, 1963 was that the people had stepping stones in 1974. The Indians are sitting on uranium in 1986. Get them off or we'll kill them. And the same people from Huntsville, Alabama, that are working and ordering one disaster that will only pay for them if they didn't suffer at all. It's nothing but future bucks and improved space plans for Star Wars and military of space. They're still working together in 1986, and they still have William Rogers, who explained to the top corporations that Nixon means business, and now he's covering up the murders of the Challenger because it is a business military operation, as were these other things that I've mentioned. In the book, there's a book out on Adolf Hitler, which I read sections of years ago on World Watchers. It was written by Glenn Infield called Hitler's Secret Life. There's a chapter 16 on the Führer and the Cowboys. As a matter of fact, it was broadcast number 456 that I talked about this book. That's only 290 broadcasts away, and I forget that there's new listeners all the time. And I cited this, and that might have updated it many times, that Hitler had a passion for the American cowboy, and he had a man named Carl May, a German, who wrote about the American frontier. He sold 70 million copies of books. He never had been in the United States at all. He never left Germany. He had this strong hero in every book that went on and beat the Indians and killed the Indians, and is an explanation that he didn't have to go to America to do it. Somebody once said to him, well, Otto Skorzeny replied to Hitler, actually, Dante never was in hell either. You can imagine these things. Well, the American Indian movement and the rounding up of them on what we call reservations, equal to the German concentration camps, was perfect for Adolf Hitler, and I've said on other programs how he used this as an example of what to do as he moved into Europe and got rid of those people that he didn't care to have around. And he used the Redskins of Mr. May's books as the people to be tested as deceitful, as venal outcasts, inferior species, and misfits. These were the subjects of his books. And then in September 1939, he began his war on the gypsies as misfits and began to move them, and also had the help of Arthur Neave, N-E-B-E, the Nazi who worked closely with J. Edgar Hoover in the United States, and they began to move the gypsies, and the orders began October 20th, 1939, and then it was also political people and Jews and misfits of all kinds, and homosexuals, as we get into the disease AIDS. He had a list of hate things that he would do, and he patterned the treatment that the Americans had done of the Indians. Now, switching to another subject, I won't do much tonight, but I do want to mention that victory of Lyndon LaRouche and his people in Chicago. The L.A. Herald, rather, had an article, LaRouche Problem for Orange County Democrats, and it's about the landslide of Lyndon LaRouche's particular party. You know, he's run for president every year. He's described as a Nazi party. I don't believe he's any more Nazi than the Democratic Party or the Republican. David Lehrer of the Anti-Defamation League describes LaRouche group as a bizarre cult group with clearly anti-Semitic messages. I don't think that the Democratic Party is any different. You may be shocked to know that I believe that. I take Lyndon LaRouche's executive intelligence review, and I take his new solidarity. I don't believe everything he says, and I don't believe the New York Times either, or the Wall Street Journal. But he has more information about what's going on in the world than they do, and he's been years ahead on the closing of our agricultural farmland, closing the American farms, starving off the food production. He's been years ahead on AIDS in Africa, AIDS as a disease, as a weapon. He's the only person that ever published articles about Henry Kissinger keeping track of where he is. And Fritz Kramer, I never would have heard about Fritz Kramer investigate the Battle of the Bulge and gotten into the Star Wars because of Fritz Kramer with Daniel Graham of High Frontier from the Defense Intelligence Agency. He's causing quite a stir. The Los Angeles Times had a story, everyone sharing the blame for the far-right vote victory. And this article in the LA Times said, a lethargic Democratic organization, lackadaisical campaigning, inattentive news media was responsible for two LaRouche supporters, one to become lieutenant governor of Illinois and the other secretary of state. Well, the Democratic Party is lazy. They are indifferent to genocide. They're indifferent to assassinations. They're indifferent to the disease AIDS. There wasn't hardly anything at their platform in San Francisco. And they run people like Geraldine Ferrara. Well, we won't go into her. They don't have candidates that even meet the issues. She was selected by Roy Cohn to be vice president for the Democratic ticket. And as I say, they'll do more on it. Lyndon LaRouche's group are saying that they'll bring tanks down the streets and wipe out AIDS through mandatory testing, and they will round people up. They're not going to be bashful about spreading the disease AIDS. Now, I have some friends that are political, and many of them in the San Francisco area who get my broadcast that's here on tape cassette and hear it up in Oakland and the Bay Area. And they go to the hall, City Hall, in front of the streets where people are dying of AIDS so they can be seen physically. And when you talk about the politics of AIDS, they don't understand a thing about it. Well, they'll understand it because the LaRouches, if they have their way, will round them up or give people the idea, like the Hoover Institute, of putting armbands, of separating them, and they will become the new gypsies, the homosexuals, and a large proportion of the black population first, and the artists and writers and the people into design and the creative arts, a good section of them are homosexual. And LaRouche says, we'll round them all up. And they went door to door and got a lot of votes, and in Monterey County, we're going to have the same thing. Arthur Dunn is running against Leon Panetta. That's a man who's never been opposed for a long time. Dunn is from Washington. He was endorsed from Lyndon LaRouche in Washington, D.C. He's a graduate of Columbia University, a master's degree in public law, and he was in the Marine Corps. I used to know Art Dunn. I haven't seen him for a long time. He used to be a long listener when I first started a World Watchers program in KLRB 15 years ago. He went to every speech I went to. He was one of my most loyal or listening people. And he had a nephew who loaned me a very expensive tape recorder that I did my tapes on for years. Well, he is mad. This is the party that says Leon Panetta is cutting funds for Star Wars by 30%. So he's going to take, you know, Ford Ord. You don't know what he can do with Ford Ord and Navy Postgrad and Hunter Liggett. And we've got Kashawa with the satellite and the Presidio Language School and the Monterey Institute, and he may just rally enough votes to get in there, Arthur Dunn, and he's a LaRouche. Well, you know, what can I say? I've gone to Representative Panetta with the story of Fritz Kramer, the man that I believe is Hitler's Fritz Kramer, the Nazi from World War II, the man behind Henry Kissinger. Congressman Henry Gonzalez calls him a hired gun, and the State Department is leased to Henry Kissinger, Mr. Fritz Kramer shares offices with Daniel Graham of High Frontier. If the Democratic Party rejects everything you say or writes or doesn't care, then which candidate deserves to exist if they turn their back away? You can't do that anymore. It isn't very good in terms of political expediency, yes, but in a long-range plan, these people have long-range plans, and you have to take into consideration what their maneuvers are. Now, going on to the Challenger and updating you on that story because there's so much in the news, Ronald Reagan is planning a big celebration for the Statue of Liberty, and every state is having a contest for Krista McAuliffe, an essay contest, and from the 50 states and from France, and the students who win the contest will be the first to enter the statue. Now, Ronald Reagan isn't that interested in schools, in education. Just look at his track record. Why Krista McAuliffe? This is so obscene. He's not doing it to the seven astronauts, and they're not new immigrants to this country. How can you single out one person and have a contest for her and not the other six? He's going to have 1,000 violins, 1,000 tap dancers, and Kenny Rogers, the Globetrotters, Mary Lou Retton, et cetera. He's going to have a four-day show of ships, of planes, and 40,000 immigrants made citizens in this country. But the point is, I think that Ronald Reagan has a guilt. I think he was going to use Krista McAuliffe for a State of the Nation speech to Congress on his progress of the past year and hopes for the future. And all he talked about was the war machine, Star Wars, AIDS, and a new star weapon, a quick airplane that accompanies the Star Wars. Krista McAuliffe was to be the symbol of the domestic scene hiding the star warfare projects that are on the burner, as well as the Heritage Foundation and the Stanford Institute, the Hoover Institute, rather, pushing Ronald Reagan's AIDS program, investigation of AIDS, and funding of the space shuttle for diseases, immune systems, and crops that I've talked about. I'm sure has Chris in mind because they've subpoenaed those tapes from the White House. And, of course, you won't hear anything any more than Rosemary Wood's tapes about who called down there to launch, but they should go to NASA and find out, as I said before, why they didn't open up earlier. Now, the Wall Street Journal has an article, probably this is the definitive of as of today, because it just came out this morning, March 24th, on the NASA Challenger and the disaster. NASA citing failed seal as a cause of shuttle explosion is now to focus on the putty. And the gist of it is they've pinpointed the failure. They'll focus on the putty this week on the joint. And they feel that there was a failure in a seal joining the two sections of the rocket booster and that the heat went through a hole. There was a failure that where the gases burned a hole that could ignite. Now, in working on this, they have listed the possibilities again of the cold. Wayne Littles, the associate director of engineer at Marshall, the Huntsville area, has what they call Scenario 6, which is was close to the investigation as they can go, and it's gaining wider acceptance. According to this theory, cold temperatures may have stiffened or slightly frozen the putty in the rocket joint. The cold temperature, the putty is supposed to flex or bulge slightly at ignition, forcing the rocket seals to close the joint. But it's temperature sensitive. It will hold pressure off at low temperatures for a short time. In this case, it happened to be 10 seconds. And then the thing burst open. So they're going into the cold. They're looking for clues into the mystery, plaguing the investigation, the putty mystery. Well, there's no question about that. The question is, why did you go knowing what would happen? And they're saying that no tests were performed prior to the Challenger's launch on the putty. How can you make a putty and send up people and billions of dollars and not know and not have a test on the conditions in which you can use the putty? The investigators have narrowed the factors contributing to the seal failure to six, including apparently the putty as part of the disaster. One, the damage to the seal during assembly. Now, when it was assembled, you could have sabotage through Lockheed, the maintenance people, to sabotage the shuttle program as it existed in order to build new shuttles that they know are better, and this was already a damaged system, and they knew it would only be a matter of time before it blew up. The other is failure of a backup seal, and they knew they had no backup at all. They were told they did away with it several years ago. Three, delay in closing the main seal. Well, the delay of the seal was that it was frozen. Four, the stiffening of the putty. Five, the presence of ice in the joint that might have forced the seal out of place. Well, it's hard to find a photograph of ice, of melted ice, at the time, but they're admitting that ice was in the joint. And a breach of the main ring due to a number of environmental factors, including cold and humidity. Well, there wasn't any other environmental factor except cold because it was below zero and it was the coldest they ever launched and they were told the cold would do it. So they have said that they're ruling out the chance that there was a hole poked in the rocket because of ice daggers as it went off. But they have photographs of the smoke ring and they felt that it was the shuttle was a victim to cold temperatures. They had 11 cameras, a record of 11 cameras out of 130 trained on the Challenger that failed. 11 cameras failed, and it was a victim of temperature. Keep in mind, like Ms. Kelly Sindona, and I won't have time to do much on him tonight, God's banker, I'll do more next week. He died of cyanide, and in this case, the Challenger went down because of temperature failure. Now, all that fighting and all those memos saying you can't go, you can't do it, and they did it, and the pressure coming out of Huntsville and the top team saying go, the secret of why it went down and what they plan next is the real story. The temperature didn't give orders to the shuttle. The shuttle went and malfunctioned because of the temperature. Now, they spent a lot of time on that, this conclusion, is the almost the winding up or winding down of the Rogers Commission. But the first Monday after the Challenger went down on World Watchers in February 3rd, the first week, I was talking about Krista McAuliffe, the speech of the president, the failure of the hydrogen leaking the fuel tank, which it did. It went through, and the rupturing in the seams and, of course, the icicles that could dislodge. And icicles, if they didn't dislodge, could leak and break in. And it affected the system, the cold temperature. We'll take a one-minute break now and then get back to some more of the shuttle and advanced genetic sciences, a got good news for you about that. Now, in this one-minute break, I'm not going to ask you for money. I usually do that. I'm going to thank you for your fundraising. The station set up a goal for the last week, and I must say these are all non-professional fundraisers. They're just good people. You should see the staff here. They're so darn dedicated. I guess you know as you listen to different programs. They are so reliable, and they're here, and they're really wonderful. They team in and got this thing over even their goal. That maybe it was a modest goal, but they worked hard, and they did make what they said they wanted, and I want to thank you people that called in, World Watchers listeners. I really appreciate your participating and being part of this station.